Thanks for tuning into Americana Music Profiles. The next episode starts right now.
You are tuned in to another edition of Americana Music Profiles, brought to you by Americana Rhythm Music Magazine and AmericanaMusicMagazine.com. I'm your host, Greg Tutwiler. Let's jump right in to the next exciting interview. Singer and songwriter Richie Kay grew up being influenced by everything from Gilbert and Sullivan, the Rat Pack, Jimmy Page, and even the opera. He spent many of his formative years playing a lot of jazz-based music. After taking a break from music for nearly 20 years, he rediscovered his love for music and a keen interest in country and Americana. His new album, Plush Life, was released on May 1st. Richie is my guest on this next edition of Americana Music Profiles. Hi, Richie. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi. How are you, Greg?
Good. Good. Glad to have you on today. I am speaking to you in Texas. Is that right?
That's right. We're in Houston, where we recorded the album, Plush Life.
This new album for you is... kind of have a classic country feel, maybe even on the honky-tonk side, but that's not originally your roots, right?
That's correct. I came to country music rather late in my performing life. I spent most of my time and my energy focused on American songs from the 1920s to the 1960s, Cole Porter, Irving Berlin, show tunes, a lot of jazz, trad jazz, that sort of thing. And that's really where I started as a performer.
How did you get exposed to that music in the first place?
Well, I think that was the sort of atmosphere in the house. When I was little, we always heard around the house one of two things, which was either opera and operetta, or we heard the great songs of the 30s and the 40s. So it was always there. Of course, my first great guitar hero was Glenn Campbell.
Okay. Did you have family members that were also musicians?
No, none was a musician, although my mother could have been a stage singer. She had a lovely voice, but for her, raising a family was the full-time job she wanted to do. So she didn't go into that.
So did this start for you as a player and singer as a younger child? When did the music bug catch you as a performer?
I think I was always interested in live performance since a very early age, and in my teens, of course, in school and that sort of thing. And then when I hooked up with my longtime colleague, Tony Lavornia, he used to be a bebop saxophone player, mm-hmm. but now he's really kind of an all-round horn man. And we've collaborated now for 20 years on many projects. When we started to work in and around the New York City area, that's really when I focused primarily on those songs, the mm-hmm. older songs from the great songwriters that were usually mm-hmm. part of musicals.
Mm-hmm. Was this in the form of, you mentioned your colleague, did you perform mostly as a duet? Was this in a band form? I know a lot of times in a jazz configuration, there's three or four musicians together. How did this facilitate out for you when you got to play live?
We played almost exclusively in a duo.
Okay.
And the drums and bass are nice, but partly it was because of the kind of work we were getting and the kind of work that was being offered, that the fewer number of musicians, the more likely you're going to find work playing live. Hmm. And what we devised was a way where Tony is taking he's the melody instrument, and I'm the piano, bass, and percussion. In one. And that's how I developed my style rhythm guitar playing for that kind of music, which is to fill as much of the bottom as possible so that the melody instrument can be set free.
I think I read in the notes where you took quite a long break from music in general. Is that right?
I did. I was not doing music at all, really, for quite a while, because there was really very little work to be found. And finally, when I was just a little bit older, although not even close to my age right now, the opportunity arose to begin singing again. And, you know, it's sort of like having your right arm attached again. It's it's an important part of the personality and a way of expression that doesn't exist in any other form, at least not for me.
Mm-hmm. What pulled you back in?
I think it was just the desire to sing. Well, I can't say it was a desire. It was more of a sort of almost like a magical pull that there was something that had to be sung. I didn't know what it was yet at that time. But it had to be done, and I had the opportunity.
How did you get from New York to Houston?
Well, we were, I was raised in Connecticut, and I spent a lot of my life overseas. And when we came back, we were there in Connecticut for a period of time, and that's where Tony and I began. And we were also working as with a wonderful vocal quartet called Swing Fever. Now, there are several Swing Fever quartets that have existed over time. This one we worked with an 18-piece big band. I sang. Originally, I was going to sing tenor, but I sang bass. And Tony had been associated with them as an act since the 1980s with the great and wonderful, my favorite person maybe of all time in the music business, is Alice Schweitzer. Alice was a singer with her sisters called the Woodside Sisters. They played the Palace, Arthur Godfrey show. They were on Sullivan. She's passed away now, but she heard me sing in a show that I was doing, and that started our long association. I'm grateful for knowing her. But we were doing that. We were doing that for a while, and then we had the opportunity to come to Texas about 10 years ago, and I love Texas very much.
So you had reinitiated yourself in the music scene before moving to Texas.
Oh yeah, yeah. Okay. I was. We did up in Connecticut. We did how many albums? At least four, I think. We the last Whoop-De-Doo. We did, and before that, Richie K's Music and Mirth, and we did a New York City Subway Christmas. We had been busking, Tony and I, in Grand Central Station and other places in New York City as part of the Music Under New York program that the Metropolitan Transit Authority had, still has, I would assume, I don't know. But, when we played Vanderbilt Hall, you know, you might have 25,000 people see you for 8 seconds because they pass by you. So a lot of people can see and listen to it, and some stop and listen to a whole song, but it was entertaining and well, that's the sort of thing we were doing at small theaters occasionally.
So when did the transition happen for you from the standards into the classic country genre?
It was a real surprise to me because I started to play solo here, and I play private parties, corporate engagements in Greater Houston and also Austin to some extent. But the opportunity to play solo also presented 3 hours, usually 3 hours, sometimes 2 hours, that you have to have sufficient variety to keep people engaged. That's mm-hmm. A long period of time.
And as a solo artist, especially.
Especially, yeah. And the three chord thing just it couldn't do the same thing over and over again. I think that's mm-hmm. That's a way of losing an audience that is easily distracted.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so what I thought was, maybe I ought to try, because I had quite a few requests for, someone would say, oh, your voice sounds, your deep, rich voice like Johnny Cash. Why don't you, can you sing this song?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that just exploded with ideas. I learned probably 30 or 40 numbers before I went out to play them. But given the audience reaction, I decided to stick with it. And I found, as I dug into the back catalog, I found just wonderful gems of songwriting in the country vein that I had never explored before. And I thought I knew the great songs of American music. And of course, mm-hmm. I was thinking only of those that had been on stage.
Sure.
But golly, when I started looking at all of these songs from the 40s, 50s, 60s, and even 70s that were not famous necessarily, but were really very, very well done, I thought, mm-hmm. I think there's something here for me to learn and to sort of refresh in a new way, as I did with Space City Funtet, the Blast Off album, which is sort of like a 50s Dean Martin, mm-hmm. Esquivel kind of a feel to it, refreshed for today. So I thought I would do the same sort of thing. Well, I can't say that I intended to do that. That's just how it happened, that I started mm-hmm. writing these things that were more country. Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break from the interview. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the interview.
Was this a beginning of your songwriting career, or had that been a part of what you were doing all along and you were just kind of shifting genres?
I had been writing very poor songs for, I don't know, a long time. On and off, I would write something. I did a sort of like a prog rock version of an album called Fire and Fall Back, which I think was 2009. And that was kind of an experiment for me mm-hmm. in writing. I don't think it was as successful as a writing experience as I would have liked, but what it did was it helped me learn the ideas of a form.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when I write my own melodies and lyrics, I'm intentionally using the song forms that these great songwriters of the 20th century invented and then perfected.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that it's in that direction that I have been going. And as soon as I understood the relationship between form and content and melody, then I started to write songs that I thought were worth recording.
Hmm. Do you feel like the classic country writers, their style, sparked songwriting for you in a new way? Is it an easier form, or was it just the inspiration that came from that allowed you to pursue your craft in a way that felt like it was better music for yourself?
I think it's sort of, I think some of both. Certainly when I heard, I think the first time I really got very excited to hear a song, one of the first ones, I have several hundred in my repertoire now, but But one of the first ones that I really admired a great deal was a song called You Call That a Mountain. B.J. Thomas recorded that, and a lot of these songs were recorded once and then forgotten. I think Bucky Jones was one of the writers on that. There's another song Jerry Chestnut wrote. Farron Young recorded it. I think it's Whatever's Left is the name of it. I think that's the one. Hank Thompson's songs. When I started to listen to a lot of them, what I had thought was simplistic without knowing the music, I actually found a complexity with, but the appearance was simple. The appearance was simple, but there are layers and layers underneath of meaning and consonants and harmony in there that appealed to me very greatly. And so I thought, at first I wanted to try my hand with one of them. And I just kept getting hooks in my head, and that, you know, it started from there.
Yeah, that's neat. So the new record then that is just released, right? Has it just released or not quite released yet?
In fact, just released. It's I'm really thrilled to see that in radio promotion. I know that just in the last 2 days, I've had nearly 500 radio station program managers streaming tracks from the album. So I have some hopes that maybe it's going to get some play on some radio stations. Some press here in Houston, which is, you know, this is my main major market.
And the album itself is called Plush Life. And again, it's this, when I was listening to it, I had this almost in some cases a honky-tonk feel, but that classic country vibe, I presume that was all intentional.
Yes, it was. And some of these songs are tributes, like Wide Awake at 3 a.m., is a Ray Price tribute. Ray Price between say 1954, 55 and 1971 or two is one of my favorite American operatic voices, you know? And he came up with that tic-tac sound that was so new and fresh then, and even when I listened to it, like my favorite album of all time is Nightlife, which I think came out in 1961. I love the songs, and I love the space that the engineer created in the mix. It's a delight to listen to, and I thought, well, I don't know if I can get there, but let's see if I can at least do a tribute.
And when you perform these songs live, either when you get ready to, if you haven't yet, or some of the songs you've done in the past, do you take the opportunity to fill in a little bit of the history or the reason you chose that kind of thing, like you just said to me? As a person in the audience, there's a fine line between talking and talking too much, obviously, but I find when an artist gives that little bit of this is why I recorded it, or you know, this is my favorite album, and so I tried to create the song in that vein, it seems to, as a listener, it creates a depth to the experience of listening to the song that's not there if you just kind of rattle them off one after the other.
Yeah, well, these songs have not been played live except solo when I'm performing, and I don't play from a set list. You know, I see what I like to feel the room and see where they're going, and I'll play to what they're responding to. But if I do play the song, it's solo. So there's a lot that's left out. You know, especially on this album, I mean, other than the voice, the mm-hmm. both the piano and pedal steel are, especially pedal steel, are so important to the emotional feel.
Yeah.
And Jody Cameron, who is my pedal player, I think is just a marvelous example of how that instrument can be used to create very beautiful sounds.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. Well, I certainly have enjoyed listening to the tracks on the album, and I like when an artist resurrect maybe isn't the right word, but there's so much, as you've described in our chat, that music that got recorded and then just kind of got left alone after that didn't get a chance to get exposed to an audience in some fashion. And so it's always, as a listener, appreciated when an artist attempts to try to rediscover a little bit of the roots of music and bring that feel back into the mainstream. So I'm excited that you've done that, and then that's the kind of music you play. And we certainly wish you well with this new record.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Well, that's a wonderful thing that you say about that. I think that our musical heritage is a great contribution. That it certainly gives me a lot of pleasure in listening to, and pleasure in delivering to an audience. But, and you know, it's not difficult to find really great material. It's like sort of the diamonds are right there underneath the surface.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And so what with all these songs that I had, like, you know, Wiggle Woggle, which is a novelty song about a beer drinker whose wife wants him to lose weight, essentially. That I remember songs like, you know, Charlie Daniels. I was taking a trip down to L.A., grooving along in my Chevrolet, token on number and digging on the radio, you know, those sort of things. Or Moonshine on the Water, which is I would like to set a ballet to, or at least a short video. Haven't been able to arrange that yet, of two young lovers. Is probably not what you might have heard in the 50s and the 60s, but I think there were some, if you hear like Charlie Rich's string arrangements and things like that from the mid 70s, you might hear something like that when there were symphonic orchestras in Nashville working for country music labels. And that's sort of my nod to them. And other songs that I have on there that are in some way, Where the River is Wider, for example, which is much more bluegrassy. You know, there are songs like Johnny Russell's They Baptized Jesse Taylor in Cedar Creek Last Sunday. You know, sort of thing that are, I'm trying to hark back to my musical ancestors.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to do with this album. Say thank you to them. And to people who might want to listen to this, I hope you enjoy it as much as I do.
Yeah. It's called Plush Life. Richie, how can people find your website, get a copy of the record, listen to the music, all that kind of stuff?
Thank you for asking. I'm at Richie K, RichieKaye.com. And the album is available exclusively at Bandcamp. And that's going to be at if you go to bandcamp.com and you search for Richie K, K-A-Y-E, you'll come up with several of my albums that are available there. I think it might be streamed in a year or so. I don't think I'm going to put it on a streaming platform for a while, but it's being promoted to radio. And if you call your radio station and you say, I'd like to hear this song, maybe they'll do that for you.
Yeah. Excellent. Great. Well, thank you, Richie. I've enjoyed talking with you about the music and a little bit of your history. And I love the progression of how you got to where you are. So, again, wish you well with it. And we'll talk again soon.
Thank you very much, Greg, for having me. It's a pleasure speaking with you. Have a great day.
Thanks again for tuning in to this episode of Americana Music Profiles. Find us on iTunes at Americana Music Profiles and on the internet at AmericanaRhythm.com.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.